Football on Off the Ball.
Every player's journey looks different and there's different ways of going about it. So we have to make sure that we kind of help create the right journey for the right player.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join. Off the Ball's Football Daily.
Hello and welcome to Thursday's Football Daily. I'm David Wilson. Coming up today, we'll hear from Shelburne head coach Joey O'Brien as his side beat Linfield 1-0 in the first leg of their Champions League qualifier. We'll hear from St Patrick's Athletic boss Stephen Kenny as his side get ready for their UEFA Europa Conference League clash with Hegelman tonight at Richmond Park. And what former Argentine striker is back in management? But first to last night, and Shelburne will take a 1-0 lead to Belfast next Wednesday thanks to Mipo Odebeko's 58-minute goal against Linfield. Shells dominated for the large part as their opponents, playing their only second competitive game of the season, struggled to get to grips with the League of Ireland champions. After the game, our own Stephen Doyle asked O'Brien whether he was happy with the 1-0 scoreline.
1-0 win at home, you keep a clean sheet, you get a win. Are you happy with the result, or is there any disappointment you couldn't get a second goal?
Listen, every time you win a game in Europe, you'll obviously be happy, you know. But listen, all to play for next week, so game's still in the balance.
You made a triple substitution in the 56th minute and paid off almost immediately with Sean Boyd's knock on for Meepo. Well, like, it was brave enough call, I suppose, to play the two up front. But what was your kind of thinking behind the decision?
Yeah, I thought second half we started a little bit flat. And listen, to give them credit, they started well, I thought. But I thought second half we were a little bit flat, so didn't want to waste minutes, really. I thought Sean, obviously, yeah, he can cause carnage when he comes on. I thought he'd done that, obviously, for the goal. But yeah, his overall performance was really good. And listen, sometimes it works like that and sometimes it doesn't. But yeah, lucky for us, it worked like that straight away. And yeah, two of them up front, him and me, but obviously causing problems then.
Linfield will return to Belfast today in the confidence that they only have a one-goal deficit to overcome in Windsor Park next Wednesday night. Blues boss David Healy says that at Linfield, you're not expected to lose any games.
When you're at Linfield, when you lose, it's disappointing. Albeit, again, huge respect to Joey and his team. I thought they were very good tonight. The level of opposition that we were facing tonight, certainly in our first competitive game. You know, the way they move the ball, they rotate a lot, they keep the ball. So it was always going to be, we had to give up some tonight. We had worked on one or two ideas. We were potentially going to play with two centre-forwards, which then would have allowed maybe Lunny and McEnroy maybe to dominate a little bit more stepping in. So we gave them a lot of territory sort of deeper, knowing that they're capable of keeping the ball. And I think in general play, I think 6-7 corners maybe in the first half, which put you under a little bit of pressure with the type of delivery that's coming in. But overall, general play, I don't think the goalkeeper had that much really to do. We had one or two little bits. I think Callum Morrison probably had the best chance of the first half. He underhit the opportunity to lob Kearns. So disappointing to lose, first and foremost, but pleased that we're well in the tie. The players will be a week better in terms of fitness. They'll be a week better with the competitive game under our belt. That's our first. I think that's Shells maybe have played 24, 25. So we had to give up something tonight. We gave up a goal advantage, a goal disadvantage, and we'll try and get that back in Windsor next week.
Asked whether that game might develop the match fitness levels of his side, Healy says that his side hope to dictate more of the game next week.
I hope so. I'm not going to sit here and say we're going to come out and chase around, because again, the danger would have been tonight with a less disciplined performance that you could have put yourself out of the tie coming down here tonight. So I'm not going to turn around and say we're all going to be guns blazing. Of course, I would imagine we'll have a larger percentage of the ball next week, especially at home. The demands will be set. The players will be a week's better in terms of the fitness and the sharpness, which allows you then better options in the ball and hopefully longer on the ball. So next week, hopefully, will be different. Shells may still be the team. A team like that, they will absolutely love coming to Windsor. It's like a carpet at the minute. It's like a bowling green, and they will enjoy coming to Windsor next week to play on it. But we'll need to prepare, set up what way we want to do. Do we go with the two centre forwards? Do we go with three centre forwards? And again, sometimes when you put two or three centre forwards on, when the opposition are unexpected, then you may catch them. a little bit. We have pace in the team. Kieran Offord come on tonight. Chris McKay's got a little bit of quality. Fitzcaesar, Callum Morrison and Kirk Miller, I thought, did the necessary and the hard yards that they didn't really shine on the ball. But with four or five good options, but now with the tie and the balance as such, gives us an opportunity to look at that for next week.
Tonight in Europe, St Patrick's Athletic begin what hopes to be for them a long and prosperous European journey. Pats have had sticky domestic form of late, winning only one of their last nine. Last season, Pats turned around their poor domestic form by having a fantastic run in Europe, where they managed to reach the Europa Conference League playoff round, losing to Turkish giants Istanbul Basaksehir. Kenny told Off the Ball's Scarlett Heron that his side have to fight to get where they were last season.
And I'm sure the experience of, obviously you got to the playoff last year, the competition, that will help the team this year.
Yeah, you know, nobody expected that, you know, to get the right to the playoff and through the hard way through. But we must believe we can do something similar. And, you know, but you've got to win the first game. And that's we're not looking forward to that.
Yeah, and you're hoping that first win carry through momentum for the rest of the season, yeah. Like it did last year.
Yeah, we do. We need it. You know, we're desperate for it. We want it. We want to go on a run, absolutely.
Yeah, and you said previously this week you need to fight for your life. Is it sort of all or nothing on these two games now?
No, I think. Well, I think, everyone at the club worked so hard to go from Turf and Bottom to get into Europe last year. It's highly improbable at the time, and for us to do it, and then having had a taste of getting right to the playoff last year. The players now know what is possible, and so we have to fight. Nobody's going to give you that. You have to earn it. Nobody gives you anything. You got to earn it, and we have to show desire to do that.
And on Thursday mornings, Off the Ball Breakfast, League of Ireland royalty Barry Murphy and Owen Heary joined Colin Buhig live in studio and pondered how it has gone wrong this season for the Inchicore club.
Against Hegelmann of Lithuania, it's all gone a bit stalled, I suppose. Is it? For Stephen Kenny and St. Pat's.
Yeah, it has. And like, the tide hasn't turned in terms of fans at Richmond Park yet, but you don't get a result tonight and you've got a tough tie away next week. That was the catalyst of Stephen last week on their run going into the end of the season, was the European results getting through a couple of rounds, really sparked them off into the end of the season. But I don't see where they're going to pick up results in the next couple of weeks. They're just so off, even against the Bows. Like, they kind of just got through the game. Bows should have won it in the end, but... Stephen, like we talked a couple of weeks ago about Stephen bringing in his own players. When you do look at it, he's re-signed some of these players as well. So he's not totally not with fault with this as well. He's brought in players and it just hasn't worked so far. But I do think there'll still be changes now come the end of July.
There's no wins in six and one goal. Like, so it shows you can put your finger on the point and say, oh, well, look, this is what it is and that's what it is. But it doesn't seem to be that way. Like, you don't know whether it's defensively they're struggling or attacking-wise they're struggling. They'll have a tough game tonight. Like, you know, this team is third in the league. They won 5-2 the weekend. They're only a new team as such, like 16 years, you know, in the making. So, again, they've only had two games in Europe last year, so it's new to them. But it won't be like Linfield where they don't have a pre-season under their belt.
A lot of goals as well.
They've scored a lot of goals. They're 21-year-old centre-forward with 7 goals.
Right,
so they'll have a bit about them. They'll be match sharp just as much as Pats. So it'll be a difficult game for them tonight.
It's one of those ties that if Pats do lose... Do you end up start questioning what happens with Stephen Kenny then? Because of the money on offer here?
Only because he's a 5-year deal, you don't. I think anyone else probably would be. Yeah. If you're in your second or third year, you probably would be questioned, or if you didn't have the kind of profile that Stephen had coming into to Pats and how hard they worked to get him in, to kind of give him a chance to overhaul it. And listen, I'm sure they'll come good. There is financial backing there from Gareth Kelleher, so I think the changes will be made. But you've got to start turning that table sooner rather than later, because you want the fans on side.
Yeah. And like you said, if they get knocked out of European football, they're not guaranteed to finish top three this year.
I know.
It doesn't look it at the moment. So are they going next year then without European football unless they win the cup? You know, and Lithuanian football has come on leaves and bounds. Like Michael Colonis, who played with me at Bowes, like, technically great player, you know, scored a winning penalty in the cup final. So they're the type of players that are technically very, very good Lithuanian players. I know this is a mixed bag of players for this team tonight, but, you know, it's going to be a difficult game. And I think Pats have to put out their technically best team tonight.
Right.
To keep the ball and to pass it well and to create chances.
And they have no problem with that. The technical aspect of the game, all good.
It's what they did well last season. Like, Mulroney, Albazetti, they were all excellent in Europe.
Forrester has to play, I think. You know, you have to get him on the ball and dictate play. Yeah, has to play up front, I think,
Remember, you can hear Off the Ball Breakfast each and every weekday morning on the Go Loud app or live on YouTube from 7:30. All of our League of Ireland coverage is free to listen back to wherever you get your podcasts. And this week's live commentary game is Bohemians meeting with Galway United on Friday night. Stephen Doyle will be joined by Richie Towle in the commentary box, and you can listen to that game on OTB Sports Radio. Having a positive result in the first leg will be key to St Pat's hopes of qualification. And Pat's defender Ryan McLaughlin wants the home support to get behind the team.
I know obviously Richmond has been really good to us. I feel like we get brilliant support here, and we obviously have to use that. I know there's only two sort of sides of the stadium that are probably getting used, but no, it worked well for us last year, and I know we get brilliant support here. It pushes us on a lot, so yeah, we're just hoping to hopefully have the fans singing for us when we give them something to shout about for tomorrow night.
And just speaking of the fans, they're obviously sold out tomorrow night. How important is that to have the crowd behind you?
Yeah, no, it's brilliant. You've seen the atmosphere even again in the last game as well, all season. Since I've came here, to be honest, I didn't really know much about the league until I came here, and didn't realise how passionate the fan bases were. And it's a brilliant atmosphere. Anyone like you sort of speak to, like even when, because I'm from up north, anyone you speak to and tell them to come down, and they absolutely love it. They end up getting addicted to come to the games. So the atmospheres are all part of that. They're a massive part. The atmospheres have been brilliant, especially at Richmond. We just want to try and give the fans something to keep the place bouncing. And it's been brilliant so far.
Lithuanian opponents Hegelmann are third in their league, 6 points off the top after 19 games, and have an iffy away record domestically, recording just 4 wins from 9 games and only drawing one. Kickoff tonight at Richmond Park is at 7:45.
On this morning's Off the Ball Breakfast,
we had this.
I used to say to Alan Cawley wouldn't head a ball. Couldn't head a ball. Like, you know, turtleneck. He was afraid of it. So when a ball was kicked out, I would say to Alan, oh God, you have to win this, Al. You have to win it. And he'd win the header, and I'd be like, oh, what a header. And he would go around 6 foot tall. Like, so sometimes you use reverse psychology on the players that you're playing with. You know, make them feel better than how they feel themselves. And it gives an extra 10% when they're playing for you.
And we also had this.
My wee man's at the stage now where he's delving into YouTube and seeing old games of Donegal and saying, what are you doing there, Daddy? And, you know, why are you talking to him? What are you saying to him? And I'm just... saying that we're talking about the weather now.
Catch up now elsewhere on the Go Loud app and every weekday morning when Off the Ball Breakfast is live from 7:30 on your OTB social channels.
Paris Saint-Germain will contest Sunday's Club World Cup final with Chelsea after they thumped Real Madrid 4-0 at the MetLife Stadium in New Jersey. 2 goals from Fabian Ruiz and 1 from Ousmane Dembele gave the European champions an unassailable 3-0 lead after just 24 minutes. Luis Enrique substituted his key players such as Ruiz, Dembele, Désiré Doué and Kvaratskhelia Kvaratskhelia in the second half in order to keep them fresh for the weekend. Portuguese striker Gonçalo Ramos added a fourth late on, in which he dedicated his goal celebration to the passing of national side teammate Diogo Jota. Dean Huijsen and Trent Alexander-Arnold both missed out with suspension and injury respectively for Los Blancos, whilst Luka Modric played as a second-half sub in his last appearance for Madrid before he joins AC Milan later this summer. Real Madrid boss Xabi Alonso admits they have a lot of hard work ahead of them.
We have not been the first ones to have a strong defeat against them, so they play really well as a team. It's been really tough to play against them, and for sure it's going to be the challenge to not thinking about Paris, thinking about ourselves, that we have lots of things to improve, that this is a process.
At the Women's European Championships, England crushed the Netherlands by 4-0, which puts progression firmly into their hands. Lauren James bagged a brace, while goals from Georgia Stanway and Ella Toon made it a relatively comfortable afternoon for Serena Wiegmann's side. Alessia Russo says that they need to build on that performance.
When that's our standard as a team, then the sky's the limit. So I think when we're at our best is when we stick together, we're good on the ball, we create chances and we're dominant at the back. And I think we had all of that today.
Wales scored their first ever tournament goal, but that wasn't enough to prevent defeat to France. Jess Fishlock made it 1-1 before France retook control and ran out easy winners by 4-1. Today, Group A comes to a close with Finland facing off against Switzerland in a straight knockout game to decide who goes through. A draw will be good enough for the Swiss, as they have a superior goal difference. The other game sees the already eliminated Iceland take on Norway, who just need a point to guarantee themselves top of the group. Both games will kick off simultaneously at 8 o'clock. Reports in Italy claim that Saudi Pro League side Al-Qadsiyah have recently agreed a deal with Atalanta to sign Italy international Matteo Retegi for €70 million. According to Sport Italia, a deal between the two clubs was struck yesterday for the enormous fee. There are some contradictions over the reported fee. However, as the likes of Fabrizio Romano and Matteo Moretto claim that the deal is worth up to €65 million. If the deal goes through, Retegi would become Atalanta's second most expensive sale of all time, behind Rasmus Højlund, who left Bergamo to join Manchester United in a deal worth €75 million plus up to €10 million in bonuses in the summer of 2023. But where does that leave the future of Ireland's Evan Ferguson? Ferguson has been heavily linked with Roma in the last few days, with reports that Roma are willing to cover all of Ferguson's £30,000 a week wages on a loan deal with an option to buy. Former Atalanta boss Giampiero Gasperini has been installed as the new boss of the Giallorossi and is looking for reinforcements as Uzbek striker Eldor Shomurodov looks set to leave for Turkey. Roma will play Europa League football next season, whilst Atalanta will be in the Champions League, and both clubs have been linked with a move for Ferguson. And speaking on Wednesday's news round alongside Cameron Hill and Owen Sheehan, former Republic of Ireland international Keith Tracy said it won't be an easy move if Ferguson does go to Italy.
There's a lot that comes into my mind here straight away, Keith, about this potential. There's first of all one of his compatriots in Troy Parrott being able to be free of the glare of the English media and just the really high standard of the Premier League by going away, scoring a load of goals in the Eredivisie. I know Serie A is a step up from the Eredivisie. The other thing that comes to my mind is that you've got a manager like Gasperini going in with Roma from now, and just what he has done in terms of his career, you'd imagine he is right up there in terms of a manager a young player can work with. And if somebody's going to unlock Evan Ferguson's potential once again, she said, I'd like to see him play under this guy. They're kind of the first two things. I've got no idea if this is going to work out or not. I've got no idea if the system he wants to play is going to work very well. We know he'll probably play wing backs like that Atalanta team, and hopefully that'll benefit a striker leading the line. What's your gut instinct on this?
I think it's a dangerous move for Evan. You know, I know it's only a loan move, but you see, he went to West Ham last season and you're thinking there's no strikers there. He's got to play. Mikel Antonio had the very unfortunate car crash. It was the German boy there that couldn't get a kick of a ball. Fulcrum couldn't really get a kick of a ball. But still, he just couldn't find his way. He started playing Bowen through the middle. He goes to Roma and there's people like Pablo Dybala there, El Shaarawy. I know there's wingers. Dovak is there as well, Ukrainian international. So he will have some stiff competition to get into the team. Initially, you hear Evan Ferguson and Roma, the manager there as well. You're thinking, brilliant, it's a match made in heaven, but he will have to fight his way into that team. It's not a given that he's going to go in there and play. But if we can get an Irish international playing for Roma on a consistent basis, I can't remember the last Irish person to play in the Italian league off the top of my head, but it'd be brilliant for Evan Ferguson if he can play. But like I say, there'll be work to be done there.
And remember to not miss a single second of our football coverage. Why not become a member and sign up at offtheball.com/join. Meanwhile, Brighton could look set to get rid of another player as Simon Adingra, who the Athletic report is on the verge of joining Sunderland for a fee that could surpass £20 million. League One side Barnsley have signed veteran striker David McGoldrick on a one-year deal. The 37-year-old former Republic of Ireland forward left hometown club Notts County at the end of the 2024-2025 season. McGoldrick has scored 163 league goals in 576 appearances in English football's top four divisions over a 21-year professional career. The striker, affectionately known as Didsy, has 14 caps for Ireland, scoring one goal. Former Liverpool captain Jordan Henderson has left Ajax with immediate effect. The England international joined the Dutch Giants in January 2024 and made more than 50 appearances for the Netherlands. Reports suggest that the 35-year-old could now make a return to the Premier League, with his former club Sunderland being linked with a move. Tottenham have reached an agreement to sign Mohamed Kudus from West Ham for £54.5 million. Kudus is due to undergo medical today and will sign a six-year deal. The Ghana attacker will become the first player to leave West Ham for Spurs since Scott Parker in 2011. West Ham's decision to sell Kudus to their London rivals is down to their needing to revamp the squad without inviting a potential breach of the Premier League's profitability and sustainability regulations. Sources at the London Stadium are adamant that West Ham must sell to buy. They want a goalkeeper, a left centre-back, a left wing-back, at least two midfielders and a striker. Kudus has an £85 million release clause valid for Premier League sides for the first 10 days of July, but West Ham are always likely to accept a lower fee. He was deemed the club's most sellable asset and has attracted plenty of interest. Spurs have made the strongest push for the 24-year-old and had a £50 million bid rejected last week. The payment is to be spread over 3 years. James McAtee does not look to have much of a future at Manchester City. The 22-year-old was left out of the travelling party for the Club World Cup and instead went to the European Under-21 Championships, where he impressed as part of Lee Carsey's title-winning side. That clearly has been enough to catch the attention of clubs in the Premier League. Among those linked with a move for McAtee are Crystal Palace and Nottingham Forest. Kyle Walker-Peters has been looking for his next move after leaving Southampton following their relegation into the Championship. The 28-year-old, who has two England caps, is set to sign for Besiktas, where Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is now in charge. Bayern Munich have inquired about signing RB Leipzig's Xavi Simons. The 22-year-old Netherlands international has told Leipzig that he wishes to leave the club this summer, despite having joined permanently from Paris Saint-Germain for €50 million in January 2025. Simons scored 10 goals in 25 Bundesliga appearances last season, despite Leipzig recording a 7th-place league finish and failing to qualify for European football next season. There are yet to be any negotiations between Bayern and Leipzig, but the player has expressed his belief that he is ready to take the next step in his career, having spent 2 seasons at the Red Bull Arena, initially on loan deals. While not a direct response to the injury suffered by Jamal Musiala's against PSG at the Club World Cup, which is expected to keep him out for at least 4 months, the club are pursuing attacking reinforcements. Bayern missed out on primary target Florian Wirtz, who chose to move to Liverpool, and also on Spain international winger Nico Williams, who opted to renew his contract with Athletic Club. It's understood that Marti Cifuentes has verbally agreed to a deal to become Leicester's new head coach. The former QPR boss could be confirmed in the role before the weekend. Leicester hope the Spaniard will be the man to lead them back to the Premier League at the first time of asking, following their relegation last season. Carlos Tevez has been officially appointed as the new manager of Argentinian side Talleres, taking over following the departure of Diego Coca. Tevez spent 7 seasons in the Premier League with West Ham, Manchester United and Manchester City, and he has previous managerial experience at Rosario Central and Independiente. El Apache will have to hit the ground running as his side take on San Lorenzo in the first game of the Argentinian Clausura on Saturday evening. That is about all we have time for on today's Football Daily. I'm David Wilson, and we'll be back tomorrow with a full League of Ireland preview.
To unlock much more from the OTB football feed, sign up at offtheball.com/join now.